There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to Is It Just Me?, the podcast where we debate all the important nonsense going around in our heads this week. Did you miss us? Have you missed us this week? It's me, Joe Elvin, and you.
Hello, it's James Williams.
Hi there.
Hi, Joe.
I like your mic stand.
Thank you. Well, you know, I invested the £7
really
on Amazon.
Standing to attention right at your face there.
So I'm determined to get my £7 worth out of it now. I might even like splash out and get two more so the guests and you can have one.
Do I owe you £3.50?
No, I think you're good for it. Don't worry.
Is that as long as that's not my birthday present?
Yeah, congratulations. Yeah. I was going to say, I feel like I just saw you yesterday because in real time I did just see you yesterday.
Yeah,
obviously.
Yeah, yeah.
We're weeks apart in terms of the show, but anyway, nice to see you as always,
Jo. Well, and great to be here. And thank you. We're joined by a media legend today. I mean, and that is not overstating.
No, it's not.
It. She has 20 years plus as a career as a writer, an author, a broadcaster, and now she's also a podcaster herself. It's my colleague from the Mail on Sunday. It's Liz Jones.
Hello.
Well, hey.
Hi.
I've never been called a legend before. I've been called lots of things.
I don't think that can possibly be true. That can't be true.
In all seriousness, Liz, you've taken a lot of heat in your years, haven't you? So, I mean...
Yes, I mean, I was just thinking about Twitter yesterday because of what's been going on in the news.
Mm.
And on Twitter, even people I thought were friends call me Nana... because they think I'm so old.
First of all, the congratulations on your 20th anniversary at You Magazine as a columnist, which is actually amazing.
It's flown past.
It has. I really mean, 20 years has gone. I mean, I remember what I was doing 20 years ago,
like
it was yesterday.
I've been in this country 28 years and it does not feel like that at all. It's so strange.
But anyway, own it, Liz. Congratulations.
Yeah,
thank
you.
Brilliant.
Because not many people, you've probably seen lots of people come and go in your time.
Yes. I think people
She's
think
seen
it's
them all
easier.
Off.
Yeah. Than it looks.
Yeah.
And, you know, you have to be compulsive. You've got to be funny. You've got to have a voice. So I think the key is that if you read something, you'll always know who it is who's writing it. That's the key. You've got to have a voice.
Yeah.
And you've got to be... I started off being very thin-skinned and I used to cry. But I'm sort of quite thick-skinned now. I'm a bit like a rhino.
Yeah.
I wonder what it would have been like for you starting in the age of social media. Do you ever think about that? Do you think you would have approached
yes,
it differently?
Because before the internet, I would file my column to You Magazine and my boyfriend or then husband would say, have you written anything about me this week? And I say, no, what made you think? So you could lie and you could hide things. You could lie about your age. You could lie about everything. But now you know you're going to be found out. So that's the biggest
change. Goddamn Google.
Yeah, those nerds in California have a lot to answer.
They ruined our fun.
All they wanted to do was meet hot chicks. What happened? That's basically Mark Zuckerberg. We're all in this place now because Mark wanted to pervert girls.
Yeah.
And that's it. Yeah.
But it's being true. A bit serious though, Lizzie, you've never been scared of saying how you feel, right, and expressing an opinion. But how do you feel now? Because I guess, you know, you can't help but feel that, especially Twitter, I think, has become quite an angry place. I know anyone can be a keyboard warrior, so to speak, and anyone that's got basically a very harsh thing to say can just say it. How do you feel? Because I definitely feel there's clearly a big difference between just a random doing that on Twitter and somebody who's got 20 years of experience behind them with a, you know, life experience and something to say from a learned
place.
Yes, but
I'm never really harsh about anyone other than myself,
yourself,
really.
Exactly.
And I think that's the difference.
Yeah.
And I think by being harsh on yourself, readers look at themselves and say, oh, I went through that. I think I'm too fat. I'm not thin enough. I don't have the right clothes. my boyfriend's cheating on me. So really, through I'm being harsh on myself. I'm not being harsh on anyone else, well, apart from David. But
well,
anyway,
I was gonna say,
skim over
you, you are quite fearless. Because, you know, having been in this job now a couple of years and getting to know you, it's all true. It's not exaggerated. It's
no.
all you. It's all sort of like warts and all Liz's life. And I don't know how you...
Did you always
stay
start
brave
that way,
with
though,
that?
Liz? Because well, I think I a lot of the time people try to whitewash their own sort of life and make it fabulous in their sort of Instagram age. People try to make their life a lot better than it is. I think what makes your column brilliant is that it's not perfect and it is yeah. very human. It's relatable.
It's kind of weird that you ask me that because 20 years ago, the very first column, when I was stood up on Millennium Eve, oh. when 1999 became 2000. So I was very harsh on myself and I was very real. And the reason I sort of hit the ground running was because I'd been an editor for 10 years before that, editing columns. And the columnists used to drive me mad. I used to phone them up and I'd say, well, what's the name of your husband? Did you, you know, can you not give us a bit more? They'd never give me enough. It was like getting blood out of a stone. They would not betray anyone. They wouldn't. There was one columnist, the most interesting thing in her life, she wouldn't talk about.
Yeah.
Another columnist, her husband turned out to be gay. She wouldn't talk about it. So because I'd been an editor in Joe's position, I knew how frustrating writers can be and how difficult and how lazy.
Yeah.
You know, so I thought, I'm not going to be like that. This is what I want from a column when I was editing it, when I was a reader. And I feel they betrayed the readers because they didn't tell them the most embarrassing, awful things that were going on. They kept it to themselves.
Yeah, well, I think there's this idea.
So don't take the money.
No.
Don't be
well,
a columnist.
Yeah.
I think this
yeah.
is idea, isn't it? Like, I think if you ask most writers, journalists, a column is that holy grail, isn't it? Cause I think there is just, it's or once you've got that, you've got it made, it's regular income. So obviously, if you're a freelance journalist. But you are right. I think people almost feel like, oh, once you've got the job, that's the finish line. And it's actually not. Because you've got to keep
really
that
hard.
Interesting.
Yeah.
You've got to keep it engaging. You've got to make it, you know, original every week.
My editor's letter nearly kills me every week. It's like 200 words.
That's the closest thing I've had, actually, because I remember you're oh my God, what am I going to write about this week?
And that was once a month.
Yeah.
Oh my God.
No, I remember when the whole Julie Myerson scandal erupted when she was writing about her son's drug addiction.
Oh, yeah.
And I went on Radio 4 and was interviewed by Sarah Montague. And she said, oh, Liz, isn't writing me the easiest thing in the world? It's not the easiest thing in the world. It's the hardest thing in the world. It would be quite easy. And I've written this. It would be quite easy for me to write a column about how I loaded the dishwasher or how I love Topshop or isn't London lovely in winter? I could write that with my
eyes. I've got to be honest with you, though. If you wrote a column about how to load the dishwasher, I think there would be vitriol coming at you. Everyone's got a strong opinion on that.
It's very divisive, loading the dishwasher.
Yeah.
But also, Liz, I mean, obviously, it's not just about the column. Obviously, you've done 20 years on that. But I mean, you're probably busier than you've ever been, right? Now you've got the podcast.
I've got the podcast.
Tell us about that. Are you enjoying it?
I am enjoying it.
The podcast I made Liz to.
You've got no choice but to say you're loving it right now, Liz.
But it's quite weird because I'm doing the podcast with my assistant, Nick, who's like my best friend, and she's worked for me for 12 years now through thick times and thin times. And when you're a writer, you don't talk to anyone. You sit at home and I just talk to my collies and that's it. So it's after I've been talking to her for the podcast.
Colleagues.
Or cauliflower.
Collies. Yeah. I have collies, not colleagues. Yeah. After I've been talking to her for about 2 hours and we edit that down, I'm exhausted because I'm not used to talking to people. No
also,
one talks to me.
You are that classic. You're an extrovert. You're an introverted extrovert. It's one of those. You're an extroverted introvert. So you've got that public persona.
Yes, but I'm very introverted.
You need your quiet downtime.
Yeah.
But I would imagine it's like brain training a dog. You know,
where's this going?
Well, have you never heard about those things? You give a dog like one of those games. They've got to really work to get the treats out of it. It's more exhausting than taking them for an hour's walk.
Are you going to offend my? star
No,
columns.
I was going to say that.
I don't do that to my dogs.
Oh, don't you? Oh, no, it's very
sounds,
good.
That sounds a bit mean.
No, it's great because it's good to sort of stimulate their brain. But what I'm saying is for somebody who basically has spent not very much time having to talk to people, I can imagine, because you know, we've joked about this. We love doing the show and making the podcast. But I think one day, Joe and I, we did 3 in one day. And by the end of it, we were like, we can't do that ever again. Because, you know, it is. It's actually quite tiring trying to be chatty.
This is why I don't want to live with a man, because you have to keep talking to them. And when they're talking to you, that you have to arrange your face like you're interested. And I'm just not interested. I'd be reading my phone, you know.
So you've got to find a husband like mine who we're so comfortable in each other's silences, to the point where I've mentioned this the other day. When we go out for dinner, I have to really make an effort, because we're quite happy to sit there and not talk to each other. It's not a damning indictment of our marriage.
It's not a bad thing.
But I'm really feeling like everyone around us is judging us if we don't interacting.
It's the ultimate compliment you can pay to a true friend or relative, comfortable in silence. It's a real, you know, it's like win.
But you and Nick on the podcast, it's a revelation. If you haven't listened to it, it's Liz Jones's diary. And honestly, they're so funny. It's Liz going over her current column, a classic column, and Nick just giving it to you with both barrels at every opportunity. Really, she's, you know, she doesn't mind having an opinion, our Nick.
Well, you need that in a friend.
Yeah.
Well, also, even though she works for me, I do, she's a bit like a husband, really. It's that I do run things past her and I do ask her advice. And I have to say, with all my turbulent years, and if you go back through the archive of the column, you'll see what's happened. She stuck by me when my family didn't, a boyfriend didn't. So she stuck by me. So I think that's quite rare in a person, really.
Yeah.
So I do really love her.
Yeah,
it's amazing. Good that you're having fun, because it is fun making a podcast.
No, we have a laugh, yes.
And then on top of that, you've also got a new book coming as well.
Yes, I'm quite frightened about that.
Why?
Well, no, but I think this is, every author I've heard recently who's on the promo tour says the exact same thing. Even if you've had 10 books or no books published.
No, it's terrifying.
It's the saying anxiety, I think. It's like, you know, first night nerves,
but
isn't
I think
it?
You just need to remember, I mean, you see the emails you get to your website. I see the emails I get for you to us. I think there's such a swell of... there's such a fan base out there.
Well, I've got lots of readers rooting for me, and they keep emailing me saying it's going to be your year, it's going to be your year. And I've had my first review, which was emailed to me, so that was amazing. So that's fantastic. And it was by someone I really admire.
Okay, good.
But I didn't pay her and she's not my friend. but it is absolutely terrifying. And this is my first novel, so I've never written a novel before. So it's very different writing a novel to writing journalism or writing a column.
And that's coming out in May, is that right?
May the 14th.
May the 14th be with you. And what's the name of the novel?
Eight and a Half Stone. Because when I was growing up, I used to have this diary. And at the end of all these different weeks, I would be 8.5 stone. That was my dream weight to get to. And I thought when I got to 8.5 stone, I'd be happy, I'd have a boyfriend, I'd have lovely clothes, I'd have a fantastic life. But of course that doesn't happen, because you think that's when your life is going to start.
Yeah.
And I think a lot of women do that. You know, when I've got a lovely house, when I've got a lovely boyfriend, everything will be fine.
Well, you just shift the goalpost, don't you? That's what I think tends to happen. You always think,
you're never satisfied.
No, you're never, it's true.
We're going to get onto this, but I've got lots of things to say about this.
Absolutely.
Which will be
so basically, check out Liz's podcast, Liz Jones Diary, available wherever you're listening to Is It Just Me right now.
And buy You Magazine.
And buy You Magazine. Buy You Magazine for Liz's column.
Yeah.
And look out for her novel coming in May. But Liz, I know you were born ready for the next part of the show, which is basically debating some very serious
topics.
Have
you got opinions, Liz?
Can you just find some opinions just for this show, please, Liz?
I'll try.
Let's do it. Right, first up this week, Joe Elvin, Liz Jones. Is it just me who has, and I'm quite proud to say this, Groundhog Weekends? Now, when I say that...
Yeah, elaborate.
I'm basically mean, you know, inspired by the classic film. I feel like, basically, one weekend for me, when I go into work now, on a Monday or a Tuesday, people go, how was your weekend? I'm going, it's really not going to be as exciting as you think.
I hate that question.
I know, because it was basically so boring and it was pretty much identical to last weekend.
People ask and no one actually cares how your weekend was.
One of those questions I feel like people say it and that you can tell they've already checked out the second they've said it. They're not actually listening to the
answer. I never ask anyone because I genuinely don't care. And I don't want to tell you about mine. Yeah.
You don't care about yours enough.
No.
But the weird thing is, I think... last weekend's a very good example whereby I think because the weather's been so awful, we had Storm Kira, Storm Dennis, and I thought, it's almost like you've got the built-in excuse to do nothing, right? To go nowhere and do anything. And I thought, you go out there, grab the world by the balls.
Do you know what I did during Storm Dennis? Went to fucking fashion shows all day.
Well,
oh my God. That
good
was,
for you. Yeah. I mean, honestly, I could bear...
They start so early in the morning.
I know.
Didn't I
look cute by 11 o'clock with my drowned rat hair?
I'm impressed. I could barely get to my recycling bin. Oh. That was traumatic enough for me. I was like, no, I can't even go there. But I had this moment where a friend of mine said, we're going to go out. You know that new expression that sends the fear of God into you when people say, are we going to go out?
I can't be friends with people who say that.
And I was like, do you know what? I should try and embrace this idea. And even while I was sending the message going, what's the plan? But the time they sent me back the itinerary of what was planned, I was like, there's no way I can do this. I literally got anxiety immediately. The idea of going to a bar in East London, then to a club, then to an after hours club. I was like, no.
Who are these people?
They're my friends.
Ew.
I need to rethink them, don't I? I guess the truth is, I don't feel bad about it anymore. I think there was a period where I felt this need to like be slightly embarrassed about the fact that I spent most weekends just sitting on the sofa with my dog or going for a dog walk or
heaven.
Cooking.
I spend Sunday hiding. Sunday is when I published and I know the fallout is going to be extreme. So Sundays have turned, I can barely turn my phone on. So I'm just spend the whole day worried about who's the email being.
Fallout from who?
From anyone I've written about.
Yeah,
so it
yeah,
could
yeah.
be a relative or a boyfriend or Meghan Markle.
Yeah.
It's that stress of people reading what you've written. Because when I write something and press send, I just pretend no one's going to read it. But on Sunday, I know people have read it and I get lots of emails and texts. And
yeah. So Sunday's almost become like, I used to always think that Sundays were synonymous with like, oh God, it's school tomorrow, I haven't done my homework. You know, that fear of dread. And so you've probably got that slight feeling about Sunday that you used to have as a kid.
No, it's awful. And Saturday, I'm sort of on tenterhooks in case Meghan Markle leaves the house or the Duchess of Cambridge leaves the house. I just wish they'd stay at home. Then I'd get a day off.
Yes, because you probably often get calls from the paper.
Often get calls on a Saturday.
It happens to me on occasion. And on occasion, I might have to bang out 400 words on something, but very, very rarely on a Saturday.
So you have reverse weekends, basically.
Yeah.
Where the weekend's actually a knot of anxiety.
If I survive until Monday...
Mondays are like, yes.
Yeah, so it's completely changed for me. But you see, I've got horses, so weekends are all about mucking out, poo picking, grooming, soaking hay.
Now, I am fascinated.
And what about the horses?
Yeah.
Boom tish. Sorry.
Yeah. I am fascinated by this because, obviously there's a lot of belief that horses are a very calming influence, isn't there? There's a whole therapy behind it, like equine therapy. And do you believe in that? Has it made you a...
Well, you see, I'm very against people... This is quite a controversial view, really, but I'm very against people using animals for their own benefits. So you use a horse to make yourself feel calmer. My job is to make the horse feel calmer. It's not about me.
Right. I've spoken about this before. I do worry about this onslaught of people taking dogs on planes and think
the dog's
not
going to like it.
Somebody I sort of like have known has told me, laughingly that after a flight to Chicago, her dog peed for like minutes at a time. And I thought it was because it was too nervous to do it during the flight. And I think that's not right.
Anyway. We live in a world of emotional...
That got really serious.
No, but you're right. The emotional support peacock. Do you remember that man that took the peacock on the plane?
Yeah. And also horses. My parents have got horses and they've all got completely different personalities. Some of them are really gorgeous and lovely and placid. They've got one who, I'm sorry, is an asshole. And I'm scared of it.
I used to have a pony like that. Oh. Yeah. She used to just reverse into me and try and corner me.
That's the one.
Anyone that's read a Jilly Cooper book knows that horses can be assholes.
Oh my God.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But they are lovely though. But expensive, Liz.
Yeah, they're expensive.
No wonder you've got to keep working so hard to keep them.
You have to worry about them.
How many do you have?
Well, I've only got two now because the really naughty one died.
They get ill really easily and like all those sorts of things. You've got to really, really look after them properly. Like
Is it just you looking after them?
And Nick as well.
Yeah.
Yeah, she's got two horses as well.
And were you brought up with horses, or is it something that...
No, I was just a mad pony book reading child who never got a pony. And every year I entered the W.H. Smith Writer Short Story Competition to win a pony. And I never won it. So I still can't go in W.H. Smith.
Oh, I can't but I love that the prize was a pony. And sort of
amazing.
Did the winner live on some Glasgow estate in a tower block? Here it is. Yeah.
But what I liked it though is you went out then, you got your own ponies, Liz.
I got my own ponies.
You know.
Yeah.
So that's something to say. So yeah, anyway, so Groundhog weekends. Yes, I'm all about them.
Yeah. Sunday's laundry day.
Yes.
Sunday's changing the sheets days. And it is my therapy, just feeling that sense of order.
Do you not have a cleaner?
I do have a cleaner, but I'm funny about my sheets, and the cleaner can't do everything. They just can't. So I need... I like a bit of that sort of like that simple task.
Life admin.
There's
something quite comforting about just doing something quite
because
mundane.
The week is breakneck of, you know, loads and loads of things to do. Not everyone loves doing the laundry, but I find it really calming. I just do.
Are you one of life's ironers?
No.
My mum used to iron flannels, towels.
My grandmother was like that.
She ironed everything. Anything that wasn't moving, she ironed it.
I don't know about you, but Sundays, my mum, my grand, that was an ironing day. I mean, talk about God, we've given Sundays a terrible rap, haven't we?
No, I mean, that is like really, in my house as well, the iron is downstairs and away from everybody, so that would be like being the scullery maid cut off from the rest of the house.
Iron is in a very high reach cupboard that I never touch. It's also one of these I feel like I should have as a grown-up, but I never use it.
I mean, I should have ironed this today, I just couldn't simply not be asked. So, you know, I just think I'm sitting down most of the day, so
But if you are sat there listening to us going, oh gosh, you bunch of boring old farts, you need to embrace a more varied weekend. Do get in touch with us, let us know what you think about the show. The email address for the show is itjustmepodcast@gmail.com. we love hearing from you. We do read every email, I promise. So yeah, get in touch and with some suggestions of topics and any guests you'd like to see on the show.
I'm going skiing next weekend.
I've
never been skiing before, and I plan to go skiing and not ski, but still, let the record show, I am going skiing.
There's
going to
be a lot of après ski, I reckon. Elvin,
does the hotel have a spa?
It's someone's actual chalet.
Oh.
Wow, you're posh, mate.
I like how disappointed this looks with that. I'm quite intrigued.
There's
I love
no
a nose
spa.
Round.
I don't like staying in other people's houses.
Oh, I'm going to pretend to be a rich person for two whole days. Can't wait.
Yeah. Well, my Is It Just Me who's had a diet epiphany?
Ooh. Well, I need to hear more about this.
I just really like the word epiphany.
I do. It's a great word, isn't it?
Well, this is the sort of theme of my novel, really, not wanting to sort of plug it too much.
I'll go for it. Fill your boots.
That's what we're here for, Liz.
Yeah.
It's all about how women hate their bodies and try and change themselves. But when they find they've changed themselves, they still hate themselves as life still isn't perfect. So when I was 11, I remember what triggered my anorexia. It was my sister pointing at my marmalade on toast and saying, do you know how many calories are in that?
God.
So this was sort of the 70s, and there were calorie counters on sale in Boots, and 19 magazine had calorie counters. So I thought, oh, this is a new hobby. This is something I'm going to be really, really good at, because I wasn't really good at anything else. So that's when it started. Mm. This trigger went off in my brain. And even though now I'm very careful to force myself to eat and to eat properly, I don't eat when I'm stressed. If I'm stressed, I can't eat. I still know what I ate yesterday, and I know what I'm going to eat today, and I know what I'm going to eat tomorrow. So it kind of never leaves you. So my feeling and hope really is that girls don't ever switch that switch and start thinking about food, because once you start thinking about it,
I think,
you never stop.
A lot of the problem with girls, I think, is that you've obviously got all the weight of the patriarchy and all the weight of those visual expectations. And I think girls tend to mature faster and have that perfectionist gene in a lot more of an obsessive way. And I think that's what it sounds like to me. You're a perfectionist, and it found a misfire in that you know, what you call
all my
a hobby.
Energy went into not eating.
Yeah.
And I got incredibly good at not eating, and my parents couldn't do any, you know, people say, why don't the parents do this? They were powerless. When I became anorexic, it didn't even have a name. I'd never heard of any. Yeah. I thought I was the only person in the world who did it. But I thought I invented it.
But I think you are right, though, Liz, in the sense that I think anyone that's had an eating disorder, it's a bit like, I think, depression or anything. You can recover, but it's about managing it. You'll never be cured.
No, you'll never be cured.
And it's something that, so like what you said, of course, you will always have
it's
that.
It's like anything like that, isn't it? It's like alcoholism or, you know, it's exactly. it's a mental issue.
And I think that's just the way it is. You just have to be honest about that. And I think this idea that you recover, well, you know, you're in recovery, I guess, is a better way of saying it. But no, you'll never, I don't think you can ever be totally relaxed about the issue of food. But then I would also argue that, you know, then I don't think I know one person that doesn't have a weird foible about
when
food.
When you were talking earlier about that goal of, you know, if I'm 8.5 stone, then my whole life will open up. And I mean, it breaks my heart because the irony being I was 8.5 stone, sometimes 8 stone, no matter what I did as a kid. And I was bullied for being incredibly skinny. And I was miserable. I was absolutely miserable. And I know that my weight at the time would have been seen as some sort of cultural ideal. I looked like a boy. I was scrawny. Do you know what I mean? It was like, and so I was in that prison as well. And it is that thing where people have very difficult time being sympathetic for a thin person. But we're all in the same thing where we're all measuring ourselves up against some fantasy ideal. It's so strange. Yeah.
No, and you saying very rightly there, it's not changed. When I was about 19, 20, I was admitted to St. Bart's and the treatment there was force feeding.
Oh, my God.
And I, over Christmas, had a friend stay with me. And when she got back home, these care workers turned up at her house. She was in the bath and put her into care, and she's been sectioned, and the treatment she's been emailing me is exactly the same.
Really?
Wow.
All those years, 40 years later,
you know, my daughter, who's nearly 15, and her friends reject all of that diet culture.
Yeah,
and I hope that stays. I don't know as they get to the age where they want to attract boys, or I don't know what that's going to be like. You can only just pray and hope and keep that dialogue open and try to keep any of your body phobias, which we all have. I don't discuss them at home.
I think it has to change at the top.
Yeah.
So for me, I looked to Vogue and I wanted to be like the people in Vogue. And if I saw someone eating a watermelon on the cover of Vogue, I'd go and buy a watermelon and I'd eat it. But having just gone to London Fashion Week, which is a couple of days ago, I felt there was a change, not just about sustainability, but about shorter models, bigger models.
Older models.
Yeah. Older models. Yeah. Yeah. So I think it has to come from the top, as well as parents, family, schools. I think the fashion industry, I felt a change this weekend.
Yeah.
It felt more caring. People weren't as nasty to you when you turned up, and I don't know.
Yeah, the problem is that we've been sold so many lies about the whole food industry and what is healthy and what's not healthy, and there's always some fad. And I think that what we've got to try and get out of is the notion of fads, food fads. It's not complicated.
Another thing that gives me hope is people like Jamila just being, you know, obsessively really calling out
on the diet pills.
Her observations about, you know, people like, you know, massive social media influencers selling gummy bear pills and all this sort of thing. I think that her audience is young and they captive and they worship her.
Yeah.
And I kind of think that it can only be a good thing, really.
And also, like you said, Liz, and I think, and it's not necessarily always about weight. It could be about the money you earn or what you take home, or it's getting that successful husband or boyfriend or girlfriend. You set yourselves these goals and you think, if I have that, it'll all be fine and it'll be, you know, daisies around the door and I'll be really, really happy.
Yeah.
And it never happens. You get to that point and it happens, and then you still feel that sudden emptiness. And I hate to say it, we're just human beings. You will always want to strive for more, more, more. I just think there's something in most of us.
And you can have a really shitty hour in an otherwise quite good day.
Yeah.
And I think it's about how you reference your own definitions of what makes you happy.
Yeah, And it's about
I've got things I don't want to do today, but then I've also got things I do want to do. And it's like, you know what I mean? It's like,
the power of having a good word to yourself.
You always remember the bad review or the nasty comment.
Of course you do,
you don't remember all the nice things.
Well, I read somebody saying on the other day, a psychologist saying it's just the way the human brain is programmed, that we will always, always, the one nasty comment versus 99 lovely ones will always, because apparently the human brain is programmed to defend yourself and to make yourself, so it's basically just totally normal. You just have to accept that's the way we all feel. Because I think sometimes we all feel like, why do I feel this way? Well, all humans will react the same way.
Well, that's when I don't want to get too dark, but when, you know, I had a few really nasty comments thrown at me on Saturday, on the other day, when I was speaking about Caroline Flack, who I did know, and it's been a really hard time. And I thought, I felt terrible after getting, I think, about 20 people telling me I was a bag of shite. Mm. Imagine what it's like
being a celebrity, I know.
When you're getting like tens of thousands of those.
Yeah.
And I think we really need to think about that.
No, it is true.
I don't know where we got here, but you know what this podcast is like.
We do light and shade on this show, everyone. But, anyway, well, I think it was really interesting. And guys, if you like what you're hearing or don't like what you're hearing, do let us know. Like I said, we love hearing from you. Drop us an email at isitjustmepodcast@gmail.com.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass? So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
If you're struggling to lose weight, you've probably heard about weight loss medications like Wegovy or Zepbound, and you might be wondering if they're right for you. Meet PlushCare, a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. If you qualify, they can safely prescribe you medication from the comfort of your own home. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
I'm doing another one because I know for a fact, although actually I love Liz Jones now because I've realised I found a kindred spirit, because I know it's not just me that likes to hoover occasionally outside. That's the drop, the pin dropping.
I'll stop you there. What's a hoover?
You know, like a vacuum cleaner.
I'm joking.
Oh, yeah. Oh, sorry. Yeah. I was thinking, Joe, you've been here long enough to know. They call that in Australia. No, I say this. I haven't hoovered outside in a while, not since the summer. God, do I now sound like a total lunatic?
But what do you hoover?
My decking. Because I've got that kind of, you know, that decking that you, no matter how many times I try to brush it, I can't quite
this
get the brush to work.
Mind.
I know. So one day I just thought, I'm just going to put the hoover on it. And it literally did it in seconds. And I was going, oh, great. But I did have a moment of going, it's 8 a.m. on a Saturday and I'm hoovering outside. And I thought, if any of my neighbours look at me right now, they're going to go, that guy's more crazy than I thought he was.
My front garden is a South London tableau full of like blown in Haribo papers, empty tenants' cans. And I just feel like I don't want to mess with nature, you know? The number of times I just stop seeing things like that, because the minute I pick it up, something else blows in.
It has a certain almost like Tracy Emin-esque quality to the art.
Quite.
Absolutely. Yes. Yeah. No, so Liz, I'm not alone in this then, am I? You've hoovered outside.
No, when I lived in London, which I still reminisce about, I had a patio garden. I used to hoover that. And now I live in North Yorkshire. I hoover outside my cottage.
Hoover North Yorkshire. Yeah.
She's keeping it clean. One dustbuster at a time. Yeah.
I hoover outside and I hoover my doormat because it's always covered in straw and hay from the horses and fur and mud. And I hoover inside my Wellingtons and I hoover my socks.
Well, nothing like rustic country living, eh? She loves it. She's at one with nature.
I feel like we're blowing the lid on this, Liz.
I hoover my collie.
Oh, your dog?
One of them doesn't like it, but the other one really enjoys it.
See, my that dog doesn't like the hairdryer, which is kind of, I guess, a similar thing. When he has to have a bath, he hates the hairdryer.
I love the idea of your dog. I think puts a new perspective on all those people that go to A&E and go, no, honestly, nurse, yeah. I fell on it. I didn't know that dogs are into that as well.
I do have that moment where I go, you know, sometimes you're hoovering and, you know, something really basic like a crumb on a carpet will not come up.
Oh, I know.
But yet somehow you literally barely go past a wire and before you know it, the wire is all tangled up in the hoover. Like, how the fuck did you suck up the wire but not the crumb on them? Is it just me, my hoover?
No. That is maddening.
Yeah.
Why are you putting crumbs on the floor? That's what
this is like what on earth this pigsty you're living in. A serious question for you, Liz. Do you miss London life?
Every moment of every day.
Really?
Like, I got here yesterday and I'm in the taxi and I'm like, I love London. I love London.
But do you think it's the rose-tinted version of London you have in your head?
No. I remember it's all your memories are held in buildings. And I think that's where I used to go for lunch when I was on the Sunday Times with my best friend. And that's where I went and had my hair done at Molton Brown. It's the first time I had colour on my hair. And every street has a memory and it's your home. So anyone who's thinking of downsizing and going to live a bucolic life in the countryside, I just tell them not to.
I would miss desperately living in a city.
Yeah.
I know that. But this morning when I'm struggling to get to work on the Circle Line and it just took over an hour to get from Victoria to, do you know what I mean? You just think, oh man, I hate London.
I guess now you've got that relationship where you can come in and just enjoy London because you're not exposed to it every day. You're not doing the daily grind, the commute from hell.
Well, I used to love the daily grind. I mean, I used to drive to this building for about 5 years at 4:30 in the morning because it was an evening paper and we started work at about 5. Mm. And all the streets were quiet and being cleaned and it was just beautiful. So people forget how beautiful it is. You have to look at it from a different
That's
angle.
True, actually. Always look up in London, I always say. You forget, actually. It's actually there's some lovely buildings.
Well, get a driver. I need to work harder and get to that chauffeur stage in my career. It's never going to happen. I really thought when I became editor at Glamour that I would get a driver because in America, all the Condé Nast editors had drivers and that aspiration was very swiftly slapped out of me.
Yeah, when you go to fashion shows, you have a town car.
Yeah.
And
for a week.
Yeah.
That's it.
You're wearing these difficult shoes and they drop you at the pavement and then there's some cobbles and you're like, you expect me to go across those cobbles? Yeah.
You all turn into Mariah Carey. You're like, I don't do cobbles.
We do.
I don't do cobbles.
No, you can't do it.
So you get incredibly spoiled when you're a glossy editor, incredibly spoiled. And it's quite hard to go back to real life where you don't have a driver and you have to walk on cobbles.
This is not a very nice thing to admit, but I'm going to tell you that when I was made redundant from Glamour, not the first thought, but one of my first thoughts was, oh my God, what if I can't get my hair discount? Oh my God. It was like, and it's just like,
it's the small things in life, Joe, that make a big difference.
Oh my God, I'm such a princess.
No. You're so spoilt. The number of times I was spoilt when I was editor of Marie Claire. Would you like to go and stay in Ian Fleming's house in Jamaica? Okay.
Yeah. You know. Casual.
Would you like to go on a yacht round Capri? Yeah, okay.
It's changed a bit since then, Liz. Yeah, unless I'm just the only one not being invited to GoldenEye. Yeah, everyone else there having a great time.
But to give it balance then, Liz, what would you say is the one thing you love about where you live versus London? And on the flip side, what's the one thing you really miss about London, living where you live?
What do I love about... I guess because I've got 3 border collies and they're very hyperactive, I love taking them up on the moor and looking at the view. So I'm very into hiking.
There must be some sexy strapping farmers up there.
Oh no, they all hate me, the farmers.
What have you done now, Liz?
What have I done? Well, because I'm very pro-animal rights.
Right, of course.
And anti-factory farming, and I've been very vocal about banning live export, and I was helped very instrumental in getting CCTV cameras into abattoirs. So they all hate me. Even the arable farmers hate me.
I could see that being a really successful episode of First Dates from Hell. Do you know what I mean? Like for like
me with a red faced farmer in Wellington.
I mean, come on. If there's a commissioning editor of Channel 4 listening and you're looking for a spin-off, come on, that's the one to do it.
That'd be an amazing film.
And then what is the one thing, if you could transplant one thing from London to where you live, what would it be?
Selfridges.
Yeah, no, I can get on board with that. Yeah.
I mean,
With the champagne bar and everything. My husband and I used to pretty much live in Selfridges before we had our daughter. We'd just go and laze around there.
It's pretty much as magical as church, really, isn't it? You feel like you go
in there. It is my church.
Yeah, it is.
I have solved many a difficult dilemma.
No, life without Selfridges is like sex without foreplay.
It's a life
just
worth
not the not, same.
It's not worth living.
It's just not the same.
Okay, so the petition to move a Selfridges. Is there not a Selfridges anywhere near you?
Well, there might be one in Leeds or Manchester or somewhere, but it's quite a long way away from it.
I was going to say that's
it.
Still quite a way. Wow. Helicopter. Oh no, doing that. I don't like helicopters.
They're a bit dangerous, helicopters.
Yeah, I don't like them. Don't get me started.
Don't get me started on helicopters.
I get very nervous about helicopters. Yeah. Anyway, on that lovely note.
I don't hoover outside. That's all I've got to say. Yeah.
Joe is probably the normal person. And you're probably also going, who are those two freaks hoovering outside?
I will take a dustbuster out to the car. I'll do that.
You draw the line there, though.
Yeah.
Fair enough. Well, look, thank you, Liz, for just making me not feel like such a weirdo for hoovering outside. And thanks for joining us. Good luck. Not you need it with your book. May your column continue for many more years to come. And as we said, do check out Liz's very, very funny podcast, available wherever you listen to us.
And I also at www.mailplus.co.uk.
That's the best place to go. Yeah. Thank you, Liz. Thank you, Joe.
Thank you.
And thank you, everyone, for listening. We'll see you again very soon.
Bye.
Your personal info, like addresses, phone numbers, and more, are collected and sold by data brokers. But Aura steps in, scanning the web, sending you alerts, and requesting your info be removed. Get Aura's full toolkit, including credit and transaction monitoring, a password manager, VPN, and more. Get a 14-day free trial at aura.com/safety. That's aura.com/safety.